to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today has a master's degree in psychology and was a student services administrator at Butte College before retiring. Peggy Jennings Sevier wrote her first book, Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation, to help people create more loving and meaningful relationships. She has now written a follow-up book, Life Talks, The Conversations Continue, which offers an effective approach to reaching out and connecting with those whom you care about. Her book provides a list of thought-provoking, open-ended questions to help create meaningful holiday experiences. And with Christmas and New Year's coming up, Peggy, I wanted to continue our conversation. Welcome, Peggy Jennings Sevier.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, your second book has these open-ended questions, and you dedicate your book to your mother because she was inspired you in so many ways, and she encouraged you to consider how important words are. And so you have created this book with questions in it and activities for people so that we don't just sit around the dinner table and kind of stare at each other or wonder how long before we go watch the football game. And what I'd like to do is, when you have these recommendations about how do I get started, what do you mean by asking open-ended questions, maybe at the dinner table? How do you go about that? Because some people are rather shy when it comes to these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So what are your recommendations?
Well, one thing I just want to say, too, right off the top, is there no one way to do it, and there's no one proper way or right way. And so, you know, follow your instincts with it. But a couple things I've learned over time, both from my own experience and when I do workshops and presentations, suggestions that other people have given me as well. But the first one is to give people lead time, to be considerate, because if you spring it on them just before you expect them to answer these questions, these thought-provoking questions.
So you don't just sit down at the Christmas dinner table and say,
"Hi, Nancy, what's the meaning of life? Could you tell us in, you know, 3 seconds?" So especially if you have younger people or introverted people who have to think for a while about, ruminate kind of what they want to, how they think about something before they share it. So let them know in advance and as far in advance as possible. So if it's Christmas dinner and you're sitting around the table and you're all going to answer a question, let them know at least an hour in advance. Here's the question. Here's what we're going to be doing. Also, it's really okay to be spontaneous. So from both books, mix and match. Just because a question you really like falls under Thanksgiving, but you're going to do it at Christmas, go for it. There's no limitations. Also, be creative. One of my best stories early on was a mother bought the Life Talks book for two of her adult daughters, and her daughter husband worked out of town 6 days a week. So to kind of keep that fire going, they used the book in a creative way in that they would mix and match questions and over the phone each night ask each other. Also, a recommendation for success is to be courageous. So, for instance, my daughter and I met a mother whose sons were kind of disconnected from her after a kind of a mean divorce. And so she bought the book in hopes of starting to ask her sons questions over the phone in kind of a safe manner. I also mentioned be positive and non-judgmental. As soon as you have your first icebreaker, whether it's Christmas, New Year's, or otherwise, whatever people do, answer, say, unless it's sarcastic or off topic, be thankful for it. Don't judge it. Don't say, "Is that all?" or "Is there something more?" or "Gosh, that wasn't very much." Or to be sure to just be happy with whatever way they choose to answer the question. And last, I mentioned to prompt the young is okay, because you're setting a tradition of asking these kinds of questions that you hopefully will do on an ongoing basis. And so to get them prompt them with words or possibilities, or the vocabulary is really okay. You're just basing, you know, you're creating that foundation for future holidays and events.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Severe, and we are continuing a conversation that we talked about holiday like Thanksgiving and other suggestions she have for creating meaningful relationships, conversations. And I invited her back so we could continue our conversation. And I mentioned with Christmas coming up, we're thinking about getting together. You get together with family and friends perhaps at Christmas time. But you have a suggestion in your book, Peggy, that I don't think many people would think about, would occur to them. And that is that you suggest that siblings, you happen to have two brothers, and you get together separate. You and your two brothers get together, you go off someplace, and so you don't wait till Christmas time when everybody else is there. You go off and have time just with your brothers.
No, and it was something that emerged from my parents losing our parents, and how hard it was for me in particular, because they lived in Chico, to lose that connection.
But your siblings did not live in Chico.
Right. They lived in Seattle. So not only did I lose the connection, the daily connection with my parents, but the connection between my brothers and I started to wane too, because they weren't visiting my parents on a regular basis like they were. And so from that, we decided that, initially we tried to do things that brought all the family members together, but the cousins were growing up, they were going different directions. So we decided this could be really difficult to make this happen. So why don't we just try to bring the siblings together? So every winter we go somewhere, whether it's Yosemite or Orcas Island or Lake Tahoe, just the three of us. And we ask each other, surprisingly, open-ended questions to get the conversation going. And the very first time we came together, my question was, which was just ripe for discussion, which was, what was your childhood like? And the reason I asked that is each of us have a different childhood, even if we grew up together and had the same parents.
Well, I especially noticed that question, Peggy, because I am in between two brothers. One's 7 years older and one's almost 7 years younger. And so our parents were at different stages in their life. And when my older brother was growing up, we just emerging from the Depression, and my younger brother in a time of abundance. And so our childhoods were different. So I really liked those questions that you suggest. You say we're under the illusion that we had the same parents in the same childhood, and nothing could be further from the truth. Depending on your birth order, gender, what was happening in your parents' marriage, their financial well-being, children have significantly different experiences in the same family. And so I thought, golly, yeah, I'd like to ask my brothers these questions.
Yeah, and I think we are under the illusion. We all think, well, my mother was the same mother to me as she was to my older brothers. And as we talk, I realize that's not the truth. There are obviously some commonalities, fortunately. But lots were very different depending on all the different characteristics that you just mentioned. So it's really fun and eye-opening and hard sometimes to hear the answers that, wow, your experience was different than mine. But also so enlightening and just really interesting too.
Well, that brings up the point, too, that you were talking about you got together with your brothers after your parents died, but you also include in your book a chapter on talking to them before they died, grandparents, parents, the elders in your family.
So important.
And, yeah, and I think it's easy to put something like that off, particularly if you don't know exactly, well, I don't know what to ask them. And you have suggestions in your chapter, Conversing with Parents and Grandparents. This is in your book. And what do you suggest as far as how to go about this?
You know, it is sensitive. I think sometimes people worry that if they approach an elder, whether it's an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, a parent, that somehow you're acknowledging or inviting you know, their demise or their death. And nothing could be further from the truth. Really, what you're wanting to know is who they were well before you were born and who they are now when you're not around. And they have this history that you can never recapture again once they're gone. And it can lead to questions and stories and advice that, if not invited to give, they may never offer. And so I think it's critical. And when I do my workshops and presentations, I often show a video of my father and the interview I did with him as a closing. And invariably, this is the part of the workshop that moves people the most. Mostly, unfortunately, because of regret, because of people who have not done it and wish they had and maybe just lost a parent or an elder in their family or in their neighborhood or their community that they regret never having taken the time to do it. So this is what I feel really passionate about is and you know, start whenever. There's no magical age, era, date, just to start. And I have it all broken down into questions from early years, school years, college years, or armed forces, if applicable, adult years, ethnic and cultural questions, and then just general questions. And I always recommend ending with the question, what advice would you give to future generations? Because once you capture that, you've got it for a lifetime and more.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier. Her book is Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. It's a follow-up to her previous Life Talks book. And you have just been telling us that it's very helpful to ask these questions while these people are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these kinds of questions, they would be open to answering. What I think is much more difficult is when they're approaching the end of life, and they might not want to talk about these things that, for example, your section on health, hospital, and death. And doctors don't want to talk about it. And I think now our society, our culture is realizing how important that is, that doctors have these conversations. But just to have it within your family. And I would think some people may be more willing to talk about it, but for others, I think it would be very difficult. And you've had a personal reason for looking death in the face. When you're younger, we don't think about it. But you've actually had two kinds of cancer.
I did, and almost simultaneously. So if one wasn't enough to introduce me to my mortality, the second one sure did.
We might tell people you're doing fine now.
Yes, that was 10 years ago. I'm happy to report. But yes, and it happened right virtually on my 50th birthday, so which is kind of the decade of addressing mortality. And so, but I've always been interested in death and dying. I don't know what it is about it that has fascinated me for so long.
Well, you say that death is the ultimate mystery of life.
It is, and it's inevitable, and we don't like talking about it typically. So maybe just because it was a taboo made it more interesting to me. I don't know. But I have always wanted to wrestle with it. I've always wanted to kind of figure it out.
In fact, you went to a conference where Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was the keynote speaker.
She was. And I remember asking her a really stupid question, which was, how should I act around my grandfather as he approaches his death? And she said, why should you act? And I thought, oh, gosh, I looked really dumb and young and inexperienced when I asked that. But I was full of questions even then. So I asked her. She said, to be real.
Well, something else surprised me, that you traveled to India with Losang Samten. And he is a beloved, almost a member of our community. He comes here often to visit. He's a Tibetan, a Buddhist monk. And you traveled to India with him. And that must have been wonderful to see through his eyes.
Fascinating. My daughter, too, has an interest in death and dying. And so after I returned, I can't remember if it was a year or two upon our return from India, but I asked him if we could sit down and talk to him about death and dying and his Buddhist perspective on it. And so my daughter and I sat down and just kind of asked away all the questions that we had about it. And so having his perspective and to contrast it with the Christian perspective that I grew up with was fascinating to me and reassuring. It's all really reassuring to me to know that there are lots of ways to prepare for it and to prepare others for it with our careful thought and consideration too.
Well, because you also have a chapter on seeking the spiritual, and you say that you understand the difference in religion and spirituality. You might mention that, because as we approach Christmas holidays, this is something that we celebrate in our culture, no matter what our religious orientation is. And some people have trouble with that, but it is a part of our culture. I mean, things change in December. And what did you learn about the difference in religion and spirituality? Because we as a culture in the United States are getting less religious than when in the polls that they have done. Mm. But I don't know that we're getting less spiritual. What's the difference?
And I don't think we are. I think spiritual is, well, let me kind of read from my book. What I glean from these experts is that religion is a set of shared and agreed upon rules, rituals, and beliefs that gives people's faith a shape, context, and purpose. Religion attempts to explain the unexplainable and give it meaning. Spirituality, on the other hand, is the internal and direct connection with the divine and all other things, living and non-living, of this world and not of this world. Spirituality, to my way of thinking, is how we think about, interact with, and manifest the divine through love. And that sounds better than, I mean, if I had to, I struggled with this chapter. And, mm-hmm. and my husband, Reese, and I had a long conversation about it, which really helped me kind of hone it. Was what is the difference between the two? Because I often feel spiritual, but as of now, I rarely go to church, which I equate with religion. And he's always argued that for him, being out in nature is both a religion and a spirituality. So we really had this kind of deep conversation about what the difference between the two is. But connecting it with Christmas is oftentimes, if I'm involved in all the secular things with Christmas, I feel like a fraud. I feel like I'm not connected to the deeper spiritual part of it. So in writing the chapter for Christmas, it was really about how can we ask, in the form of questions, how can we bring ourselves back to the spiritual and or religious part of it, so that we are truly connected to what that holiday is about.
Mm-hmm. You say that you don't think there's one right answer to these questions, no matter what some religious leaders might lead us to believe. And you say, so if no one person or faith has all the answers, which you say is your opinion, that there's not one person or faith that has all the answers, then this allows us a seat at the spiritual table to share equally our opinions, experiences, and beliefs related to the origin, meaning, and ultimate outcome of life. And so you have some questions, you say, to assist in this feast of contemplation and conversation. And you said that maybe children also would be an important part of this, because often they have insight that is simple, awe-inspiring, and not yet tainted or jaded by dogma.
And I think they're the closer to birth, the closer they are to having come from that other part, that other side, whatever we may think of as what was before birth. And so sometimes they can say things that just are kind of amazingly simple. But also, it's again going back to that doing events and activities that are meaningful and multi-generational, so that they get used to being asked the questions and thinking about and contemplating and coming up with their own ideas and their own faith and their own words and vocabulary for it all, so that they can continue to share it as they become older and adults, but also learn from their elders.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier, and her new book is Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. And in that section on seeking the spiritual, you have very basic questions. Where do you think we come from? Where do you think we will go upon death? What are your beliefs regarding the origin of life? So all of these questions are so basic that we often don't stop what we're doing to consider these questions.
You know, as I put those together, there's a chapter in this book called Around the Campfire. And I thought these could be simultaneously the same chapters, because one of the things I think that's so great about camping or backpacking or being in nature or being in your backyard or on the ocean or wherever your special place may be is that is the time that you allow for yourself, hopefully, to ask these kinds of questions of yourself and of those that you're with, too, to have those kind of conversations, because they're fascinating, if nothing else.
Well, when it comes to Christmas, usually in your book, you just have some questions. They could be taken in random order. But when you get to the chapter on Christmas, you set up a calendar. And this calendar was especially touching for me, Peggy, because each day you have a question you suggest. December 1st, December 2nd. December 8th was my husband's birthday.
Ah.
And on that day, you say, what was the best gift you have ever received? That was a very touching question for me because of my husband and the fact that that he died in the month of December. And that, to me, was a gift. Mm. The way he died was a gift. And the December 9th, the day after his birthday, what is your favorite Christmas memory? And my husband died on Christmas morning.
Oh my gosh.
Most people think, oh, dear, how sad. But that was a wonderful, it is a wonderful memory, that memory of Christmas morning of 2 years ago. And then
aren't
on December.
You blessed to have feeling.
I really do feel that. And then on December 10th, I think this is a question that everybody would be able to answer. If you could, or would like to think about, if you could change or add one new activity or tradition to make the holidays more meaningful, what would it be? And this is not about a question about religion. This is just such a wonderful question, Peggy, that I think even people who say, well, Christmas is too religious for me, I don't want to get involved in that. But I love that question.
Yes. And it's such a holiday about love and about generosity and about giving that it's just a great time to ask these questions, because the holiday lends itself to that.
Yeah, it does. So on your chapter on Christmas, you suggest a question a day. You have it set up from December 1st to December 25th. And some of them do apply more to, say, people of a Christian tradition. But you also say that if Hanukkah is their what they celebrate, that you can come up with the 8 days of Hanukkah, for example. And so you just change or modify the questions to fit your situation.
I set it up like an Advent calendar, only because as a kid, and even now, I love Advent calendars. It's kind of this anticipatory way of celebrating the 25 days till Christmas. And some of the questions are more whimsical, some are more religious, some are more spiritual or traditional based. So it's kind of a hodgepodge.
Well, following close on the heels of Christmas is New Year's Day. And I thought your what you had to say about New Year's was interesting because, well, what about New Year's, Peggy?
Well, I've always felt this huge pressure on New Year's because it seems like everyone is doing something exciting and fun and I'm kind of left uninspired, maybe because I have kind of a holiday hangover or whatever. My children's birthdays are around those times, so I'm kind of traditioned out and kind of tired from all the festivities. So I've always felt this pressure to live up to the version that you see on movies or what have you.
Champagne.
Exactly. And New York instead, City. And, you know.
And instead there you sit in your pajamas.
Yeah, exactly. Which is where I want to be, is in my pajamas, but feeling kind of uninspired.
But you do have interesting questions because
yes.
It's the time of year when we look back at the past year and look ahead to the year that's to come. And I think people would enjoy thinking about these questions that you ask on New Year's.
I think it's kind of an inspiring time of year. Mm-hmm. Anytime you start something new, it's a time to both reflect looking backwards and then also to project and to think about the future. So I have this chapter broken into two parts, one looking last year and then looking, as I mentioned, forward to the new year. So things like, what was the highlight of last year? What about the last year? Are you eager to leave behind? What surprised you most about last year? And then looking forward, what are you looking forward to most in the coming year? What is something that was left unfinished last year that you want to complete this year? What relationship would you like to work on or improve this year? And just to name a few.
Well, my husband and I actually did something like this because I mentioned most of our conversations were dog care. But once a year, we would sit down and look at what the last year, what we thought we did well or what we'd do differently. And then what were our dreams for the next year?
Oh, I love that.
And we enjoy it. But I was happy to see your questions because these were more thorough than our kind of basic just few questions. So I really took a close look at these questions that you suggest for people as they say goodbye to the old year and welcome in the new year.
And I also feel strongly that whatever, as you look forward, whatever you kind of put out there in the universe with, again, words being powerful, that it helped manifest it. So if you say this is what you'd mm-hmm. like to have happen in the new year, then it's more apt to happen.
Yeah. Before we conclude, I would like to mention a chapter you have on reconciliation because I think as you say goodbye to an old year and hello to a new one, that it might be time to take a look at relationships, whether it's family or colleagues, you mentioned in your book, people you work with, that, and here's one other question, Peggy, that was a yes or no question in your book, is kind of a basic question to broach the subject if things you feel maybe aren't quite right between you and some other person, that you ask the question, are we okay?
It's yes, I use that a lot when I just intuitively feel like I'm off with somebody. And it could be a family member, it could be a coworker, it could be a friend, and I just want to check in. It's kind of like a thermometer. Are we okay? And oftentimes the person will say, yeah, why? And seem perplexed that I would even ask it. And then that reassures me, or it's an invitation to say, yeah, I've been feeling that way too, and kind of an entrance into a deeper conversation about where we're at.
Well, I think people would really enjoy participating in these activities, Peggy. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much, Nancy.
My guest has been Peggy Jennings Severe. Her new book is Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.